නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Probably you can remember that we were discussing Upakkilesa Sutta and we completed that last week. And basically, Upakkilesa Sutta deals with certain defilements which are hindering the progress of samadhi, concentration. So Buddha points it out when he was addressing or rather admonishing Venerable Anuruddha, where Venerable Anuruddha was trying to implement or acquire the divine eye, Dibbacakku. And at that time he has faced certain problems, and then he was talking to Buddha, and Buddha himself has faced the same issues while he was as a Bodhisattva, and then he was explaining what are the other things that we need to concern when we are practicing that kind of samadhi. So the upakkilesas or the imperfections mentioned in that sutta are not only relevant to samadhi, we can say it is relevant to vipassana as well. And in the broader sense, actually, we can recognize three categories of upakkilesa, or we can say the term upakkilesa being used in three different connotations. The first one is very much what we have already discussed, where when one is practicing samatha meditation, tranquility meditation, there may be various kinds of hindrances, various kinds of imperfections which are influencing the path, which are influencing the result. So if we are a little careful and concerned about these imperfections, then we can properly manage, we can properly progress. And on the other hand, later in the Visuddhimagga, there is another explanation relevant to upakkilesas, and they are called vipassana upakkilesas, the imperfections coming towards the vipassana. And then the third one is where another category of upakkilesas, we can say imperfections. Actually, they are very much like certain kind of shades of the main roots, main unwholesome roots. Probably you know that there are three main unwholesome roots: lobha, dosa, moha, greed, hatred, and delusion. And we can recognize they are the main unwholesome roots. And through that, there may be various kinds of defilements arising. So they are a mixture of them, they have certain influence coming from them. And so they are not the main kind of defilements. Now, say for example, if you consider lust, so we can recognize immediately it is the raga. The very first root, the greed, has a great influence on that, and we can say that is very much that. And again, if we consider ill will, hatred, and that is very much the second unwholesome root. But there are certain other imperfections which are very subtle. And but if we look closely and analyze carefully, there may be possibility of finding out the roots, those unwholesome roots, also available in those subtle defilements. So those subtle defilements are also called upakkilesa. In this Vattupama Sutta, there are actually 16 upakkilesas or imperfections mentioned, and they are of belonging to the third category. So that means they are basically defilements, but are very subtle defilements, and they are rooted in the lobha dosa moha. So we can't immediately say they are relevant to meditation, but of course they are relevant to meditation. But in general, they are defilements. They are very subtle defilements, subtle imperfections. And this sutta, in a way, has, we can see, there are two major events. The first event is where Buddha explained Dhamma to the monks using a simile, and in the crowd, and that is actually the first part. And the second part is there was one Brahmin called Bharadwaja in the audience, and he asked certain questions, and to that Buddha answers, and he became a monk, and ultimately he became an arahant. So these are the two major events recorded in this sutta, and particularly it consists of several meditation methods, and how Buddha gradually explained various kinds of meditations, and starting with samatha meditation, and making one practice vipassana, and then one becomes a stream winner, and then one becomes a sakadagami, anagami, non-returner, and after one becomes a non-returner, how he is practicing further vipassana to attain arahantship. So this kind of a summary we can recognize in this sutta. So now we are going to go through the sutta in detail. Now, in one occasion, Buddha was living in the Anathapindika's park in Savatthi, and at that time Buddha himself addressed the monks, and he says, because suppose the cloth were defiled and stained, and a dyer dipped it in some dye or other, whether blue or yellow or red or carmine, it would look poorly dyed and impure in color. So why is that? So basically this is an obvious answer. That is because the cloth is defiled, cloth is stained. It is not a pure, clean kind of a cloth, but it is defiled, stained with various impurities. Maybe various dust, maybe certain other kind of stains. So different stains are there. As a result of that, that particular cloth is not clean. If one is trying to dye that so that it may be taking another different beautiful color, the work is not going to be successful because the cloth is quite defiled. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, so if the mind is defiled, the mind is unhappy, if the mind is completely impure, then basically with such a mind, if one die and reborn, the birth will be quite unfortunate. The destination would be not a good one. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned, assume that there is a very bright, beautiful, or rather say clean kind of a cloth. Suppose it's a white cloth, quite clean. Assume that's a new, fresh, clean, white cloth. Then if one is dyeing that, then immediately it may take the proper color, whatever the person wants to include. So Buddha mentioned similarly, if one has a pure mind, undefiled mind, then actually the destination would be happy because he is maintaining that sort of a undefiled mind. And therefore Buddha mentioned what are the imperfections which cause to defile the mind. So here actually 16 imperfections are mentioned. We'll go through them one by one at the latter stage. I'll just go through them briefly here. So Buddha mentioned covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind. So likewise, different kinds of imperfections Buddha mentions here. Covetousness, that is a kind of a strong greed, unrighteous greed, is a defilement. Then ill will is a defilement, anger is a defilement, resentment is a defilement, contempt is a defilement, insolence is a defilement, envy is a defilement, avarice is a defilement, deceit is a defilement, fraud, obstinacy, rivalry, conceit, arrogance, vanity, negligence is a defilement. So likewise, Buddha has listed here 16 defilements. So after telling them, then Buddha mentioned what is the practice basically, what one needs to do. If one know very well, okay, these are the defilements, what one needs to do when they are available. Knowing that covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind, a bhikkhu abandons it. Now still, how to abandon it is not mentioned here. But anyway, one has to abandon it. So one by one, each defilement has to be recognized. And after it being recognized, so one has to abandon it. It may be using a samatha practice so that the defilement is temporarily subsided. On the other hand, it may be using a long-term vipassana practice so that the defilement is completely uprooted. So that's a long process. That's the best and the foremost kind of process that we'll discuss in the latter half of the discussion. And basically, anyway, one needs to understand these are defilements. So sometimes what happens is we don't know that they are defilements, and we sometimes think that they are maybe a useful ones. They are kind of an inherent qualities of our character, and we sometimes identify with them. And even we feel great with them. Say for example, if one feels conceit and even arrogance, so one feels quite confident, maybe quite strong ego is there. So one might love to have it, and one may be enjoying it. One may be even suppressing others using such kind of defilements. So basically, unknowingly, these defilements are anyway working in our mind. But when we are not aware of them, we become a poor victim of those defilements. I mean, seeing a defilement as a defilement is a great win. It's a great thing in a way. Because typically, when one is not mindful, when one is not in the path, when one is completely ignorant, so he is very much like a puppet of various defilements. He don't know what he's doing. He don't know what he's talking, and he don't know what he's thinking, because he is completely under the influence of defilements. So basically, in the complete spiritual path, as one is progressing, one is aiming at purifying the mind, completely abandoning defilements. Pahana Ramo, Pahana Ratu. So that is one interesting point explained in the Arya, what you call this, not Arya Vasa, there's another one sutta very common in Sri Lanka, Arya Vansa Sutta. So there are actually Buddha mentioned there are certain very very important ancient practices which are coming from all the Buddhas. And there, Buddha very beautifully mentioned, one important aspect is Pahana Ramo Pahana Ratu. So that means one is inclined towards purifying one's mind from the defilements. So first of all, before we purify our minds, actually we first need to recognize what are defilements. So that is why, so here Buddha one by one explained what are the 16 defilements. Actually he mentioned it in the name, but we'll try our best to explain them in detail when we are discussing something about the vipassana. And if one knows that these defilements are available in the mind or present at the moment, then through some kind of a mechanism, say one needs to do abandoning that. Now Buddha mentioned, knowing that covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind, a bhikkhu abandons it. Now, he is working on it, and after that, he finds that it has abandoned. Now, similarly, he mentioned each and every defilement listed above, and a monk is aware, okay, now it is not there, because he has already abandoned it. And when the defilements are abandoned, one interesting point here is that he actually takes unwavering confidence in the Buddha, unwavering confidence in the Dhamma, unwavering confidence in the Sangha. So that means if one's mind is defiled, one can't have that kind of unwavering type of confidence. He may have time to time some kind of a faith, some kind of say confidence in the Buddha, but it's fluctuating, it's way, it's changing, and even he can completely remove that. Even I mean, there may be various reasons. Okay, someone has completely abandoned the trust in the Buddha and he may start following another teacher. Say one had some kind of an understanding about the Dhamma, but later if it is not proper or properly established, then one can abandon it and start following something else. That is also possible. And on the other hand, say one is following the Sangha, helping Sangha, respecting Sangha, and due to various reasons, okay, one can even abandon that and have kind of hate even towards the Sangha and may start following something else. So likewise, if we consider the typical faith towards the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha in a normal worldling, so it is varying, it is not still fixed, or it is not still confirmed. But on the other hand, if one's mind is fairly free from defilements, so then naturally his mind starts appreciating the Buddha, starts appreciating the Dhamma, and starts appreciating the Noble Sangha. So this is something here mentioned. So very much like the first half, actually here we need to understand some kind of meditation here. So Buddha starts explaining how Buddha Nussati being practiced. So when defilements are somewhat subsided, then Buddha mentioned he has confidence in Buddha. He starts trusting the Buddha. The Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. Now this is the typical way of respecting the Buddha. Itipiso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijjacharana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisadamma Sarati Satta Deva Manussanang Buddho Bhagavati. Now this is the typical way of paying respect to the Buddha, venerating the Buddha, and here it is mentioned. So that means in order to have that kind of an unwavering faith, unwavering trust, unwavering kind of confidence, one's mind has to be fairly pure. And then similarly Buddha mentioned he acquires unwavering confidence in the Dhamma. The Dhamma is well proclaimed by the Blessed One, visible here and now, immediately effective, inviting inspection, onward leading, to be experienced by the wise for themselves. Swakhato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandittiko Akaliko Ehi Passiko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditabbo Vinyohiti. Now this is the Pali stanza that we are using to pay respect to the Dhamma, venerating Dhamma. So that is fully understood, have great confidence, and therefore he has unwavering trust, unwavering confidence in Dhamma. And then Buddha further mentioned he acquires unwavering confidence in the Sangha. The Sangha of the Blessed One's disciplined disciples is practicing the good way, practicing the straight way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way, that is the four pairs of persons, the eight types of individuals. This Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sango, Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sango, Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sango, Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sango, Yadidan Chattari Purusa Yogani, Atta Purusa Puggala, Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sango, Ahuneyo, Pahuneyo, Dakkineyo, Anjali Karaneyo, Anuttaram Punyakketang Lokasati. So this Pali verse is mentioned here and the translated here by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And so basically at this level, if one is having unwavering kind of confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, he is a noble person. He is at least Sotapanna, stream winner. And basically, so by that time, certain defilements are abandoned. So we already have seen that 16 defilements explained above, and among them, certain defilements are abandoned when one becomes a Sotapanna. So we will discuss one by one and how they are being abandoned in the future. So I'm just trying to give you an idea about the whole sutta. So among those 16 defilements, few are abandoned when one attains Sotapanna, a stream winner, stream entry. So by knowing that, he is quite happy. Now another part here is when one is further reflecting the qualities of the Buddha, qualities of the Dhamma, qualities of the Sangha. So Buddha explained here, one gets further and further developed, progressed in meditation. It's very much like if you have some temporary confidence in the Buddha, some trust in the Buddha, by that time the defilements are absent. So now you can make use of that opportunity to further develop other necessary qualities. So if one has completely abandoned certain defilements, then one is Sotapanna. And if one has complete defilements, some more defilements, say, then one is once returner. If one has completely abandoned some more defilements, then one is a non-returner. And if one has completely defilement or abandoned all the defilements, then we can say he's an arahant. But here, assume that one has somehow subsided the defilements temporarily. And now one is developing the trust in the Buddha. So that is how typically the practitioners would do, because immediately we can't become a Sotapanna. So we temporarily somehow calm down defilements, temporary subside defilements. And now we further strengthen the mind using the trust of the Buddha. That means basically one is developing Buddhanusati. So more and more one develops Buddhanusati, the reflections of the qualities of the Buddha. So further and further his mind become pure, his mind become uplifted, gladdened. So further confidence is developed in the Buddha. So as a result of that, the defilements are further very much like keeping far away, further subsided, and his mind is further released and defilements are abandoned and they are relinquished for the time being. And if it is so, then he gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma. Labhati Atta Vedang, Labhati Dhamma Vedang. So that means as defilements are abandoned, even though it is temporary, now further one is developing Buddhanusati, the reflections of the qualities of the Buddha. Now as it is growing, the confidence is growing, the qualities are growing, actually he gets kind of a confidence in the Dhamma, confidence in the Sangha, confidence in the Buddha, and here particularly confidence in the teaching. He is now more convinced, he is now inspired, and as a result of that he gets gladdened, he becomes gladdened about the Dhamma. When he is glad, rapture is born in him. Now this is a kind of a series of other events now going to grow as a kind of a sequence, as a cause and effect relationship. When one's mind is free from defilements, now he is further developing the qualities of the Buddha. He is reflecting those qualities. As a result of that, his mind become happy, gladdened. As a result of that, now further he become gladdened, so that he is rapturous. And when rapture is born, then body and the mind become more tranquil. When the body and the mind is more tranquil, he feels pleasure. And then his mind becomes concentrated. Sukhino chittam samadhiyati. So basically, if one is trying to develop, say, samatha meditation, so this is the technique. So we need to recommend where, first of all, you need to somehow calm down the defilements. And then you need assume here we are practicing Buddhanusati. And as a result of that, your mind is further gladdened, further refined, further happy. And once it is grown, it becomes more rapturous. And it makes the body and the mind more, say, tranquil. As a result of that, you feel happy. And in that happy state, mind easily get concentrated. Now the mind is concentrated. So very much like the samatha meditation, so using Buddhanusati, so you can have a very strong samadhi. But you can't attain jhana, but you can completely abandon various defilements, temporary, subside them, and then reflect Buddha's qualities. And gradually, actually you can fully concentrate the mind. Actually, there are certain systematic way of doing it. Assume that you are practicing Buddhanusati. Typically, the 9 qualities are taken, as we simply explain in the up. So those 9 qualities, first of all, one needs to understand. So what is the meaning of Arahant? So here, for example, the Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in the true knowledge and conduct. Sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. Now these are the supreme qualities attributed to the Buddha, and first of all we need to have some understanding about these qualities. And when one has that understanding, now suppose one is simply going through one by one. When one is reflecting a particular quality, say for example, Arahant. So there are various reasons why the Buddha is called Arahant. Samma Sambuddho. So there are reasons why Buddha is called Samma Sambuddho, fully enlightened. Now, Vijjacharana Sampanno. So he is endowed with the knowledge and the conduct. So likewise, one has to little explore about these Buddha's qualities and have some understanding about them. And during the meditation, now one is actually trying to remember them at the early stage. So when one is say mentally not Arahant, so now you are recognizing why Buddha is called Arahant. When you are recognizing, say when you are noting as Samma Sambuddho, you immediately remember why Buddha is called Samma Sambuddho. So likewise, your mind has to be trained. So more you train like that, actually the qualities become temporary acquired to the mind. Now Buddha has these qualities, and when we are reflecting them, our mind also somewhat blossomed, somewhat beautified, somewhat strengthened with these qualities. Say for example, when one is telling Arahant, so one reason why we call Buddha Arahant is that he is not doing any kind of a unwholesome deed using the body, speech or mind, either in the open or either in hide. So basically that is why he is called Arahant. And another reason is that he is he deserves all different kinds of offerings. So likewise, many reasons why we are calling him Arahant. So when one is reflecting like that, so one's mind become gladdened, so endowed with certain amount of such qualities. Suppose now you are going to the next quality. And you do the same thing. You go to the next quality. You do the same thing. You go to the next quality. You do the same thing. So likewise, it's a very much like a conditioning process. So you are conditioning the mind in the positive sense. you are reflecting Buddha's qualities, and you are very much like getting some positive influence to your mind, so that your mind also become more and more pure, more and more uplifted. Now, when it is there, now if you want to further refine the concentration, if you want to further say concentrate the mind, now what you can do is you can temporarily leave some qualities which are not that familiar to you. Now suppose there are 9 qualities. Among those 9 qualities, assume that two or three qualities are not that appealing to your mind. Now what you do is you are dropping those two or three qualities. Now you are only reflecting say 6 qualities. So when you are reflecting 6 qualities, now since they are more familiar to you, now your mind become more and more further uplifted, further gladdened, further confident, and more faith. Now as you are further continuing, even from among those 6, there may be ones which are little weak and you don't feel more appealing and you don't feel really appreciated, and you abandon them as well. Now assume that only 5 qualities are there. Now you are reflecting them. So likewise, you are reducing one quality after one quality, dropping one quality after one quality, and ultimately you are coming to a single quality which is more appealing to you, which is more pleasing to you, and a quality which is really appreciative to you. Now you are dealing only with that. Now slowly, in that quality, mind is fully engaged with. In that quality, mind is fully appreciating, and in that quality, mind is fully concentrated. Now this is how we are slowly focusing our mind, concentrating our mind in Buddha Anusati. So this is one method actually. So when one's mind is fully in that particular quality, so we can say, okay, his mind is fully uplifted, quite happy, endowed with those very good qualities. So as a result of that, one's mind is fairly pure. And similarly, the similar approach you can take in the Dhammanusati and in the Sanghanusati. So you can do the same method, and ultimately your mind get fully concentrated. And so when that is available, so that is how here it is mentioned in general. So when your mind is fully knowing, appreciating Buddha's qualities, basically that inspiration develops, and that gladdens the mind, and then the rapture is born, and then body and the mind become more kind of gladdened, rapturous, and tranquil. And as a result of that, you feel pleasure, happy, and the mind is now fully concentrated. Now you don't need to even reflect. Rather, you can simply dwell in that concentration, and what we can call it as a upachara samadhi, kind of a strong samadhi, neighborhood concentration. So you are simply dwelling, enjoying that kind of a samadhi. The similar approach is available for Dhamma, what you call Dhammanusati, where you are reflecting the qualities of the Dhamma. And as I explained, you can little by little strengthen your trust, confidence, and then you are leaving aside, dropping certain qualities which are not that familiar, not that appealing to you, and ultimately you are coming to a single quality which is more appealing, more appreciative, and then in that quality you can fully concentrate your mind. Similar approach can be taken in the Sanghanusati, and likewise, so you are capable of acquiring fair amount of what you call the concentration. Now during this time, actually the defilements are expelled. Defilements are not present, because your mind is fully concentrated, and on top of that, the good qualities are temporarily absorbed, temporarily imposed, and the mind is entrusted with very good qualities. As a result of that, his mind is free from defilements. Now, at the next part, actually, Buddha explains how he is deserving alms, and now he is not in a situation to get defiled. Now, this is the state of a non-returner. So, here Buddha mentioned, bhikkhus, if a bhikkhu of such virtue, such a state of concentration and such wisdom, eats alms food consisting of choice hill rice along with various sauce and curries, even that will be no obstacle for him. Now, basically, that represents now the complete abandonment of kamasava. We can say the raga is fairly abandoned now. The lower defilements, there are five, what you call as them as fetters. So the lower five fetters are completely abandoned. So as a result of that, there is no any kind of inclination towards the lower realms. So to the, say, the human realms, animal realms, hell realms, even the celestial realms, he has no any kind of an inclination. He's a non-returner now. So since he's a non-returner, there is no danger for him from the typical kind of pleasures, from the typical kinds of luxuries, and because there is no attachment, he is not being deluded by them. His mind is completely free from any such kind of a greed for such items. So that's why it is mentioned, now this particular monk, even though he gets the best food, the best arm food, maybe they are delicious, and even he gets the best robes, even if he gets the best abiding places, maybe the best medicine or whatever, fame, gain, all this, now he is fairly confirmed his status, because he is no more deluded by the typical pleasures, sensual pleasures. So sensual pleasures are no more capable of stressing him, subsiding him. So now he is a non-returner. Now, after this, this sutta explains about Brahma Viharas. So, you know, there are four Brahma Viharas, divine abodes, what you call as the Metta, Mudita, Karuna, Upekkha. And now the practice is going towards that. Now, basically, in the typical understanding, typical meditation environment, one is taking Buddha Anusati, Dhamma Anusati, Sangha Anusati. So they are the Anusati meditations. And then Metta, loving kindness meditation, Marana Anusati, the reflection on the death, and Asubha, the loathsomeness of the body. Now they are called actually as the guardian meditations. Chaturarakka Bhavana. Buddha Anusati, Metta, Asubha, and Marana Anusati. I mean, you can replace Buddha Anusati with Dhamma Anusati or Sangha Anusati, doesn't matter. But anyway, one of them are there. And then loving kindness, and then Asubha, and then Marana Anusati. So likewise, these four meditations are typically considered as the guardian meditations. So they basically protect the mind. They prepares the mind. They basically helps to abandon the defilements temporarily. And then you can get on to some higher practice, some higher meditation, like say Anapanasati or any other Satipatthana meditation. So typical explanation is like that. Here, by the way, in this particular sutta, actually the Brahma Viharas are being used to cultivate Vipassana. The first part is Buddhanusati, Dhammanusati, Sanghanusati, using which one is fairly purifying one's mind. And we have to say, even though it is not included in the sutta, so using after that one is practicing vipassana. And then further to develop one's mind, one is using Brahma viharas, and then one is further purifying one's mind. So that is the method highlighted here. Now already this person is a anagami by this time. So when we are considering the structure of the sutta, so by this time when we are reaching this statement, so we can say, so that particular monk is an anagami. Now still there are 5 more defilements, or 5 fetters still available. Now in order to abandon that, he is doing some higher training. So that is actually based on the Brahma viharas. So that is the method actually mentioned in this sutta. But there are various other methods explained in other suttas as well. So what we need to understand is, this is not the only method, and this is another method. So you know, if one is practicing Anapanasati, you can complete all the 4 kinds of Satipatthana, and you can completely attain Arahantship even. So that is explained in the Anapanasati Sutta. Say if one is practicing Dhatu Manasikara, say you can step by step develop, and can even lead to Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, one can even become an Arahant. So likewise, there are many approaches available. But in this sutta, the approach is a little different. So one practices samatha using Buddhanusati, Dhammanusati, Sanghanusati, and then some kind of vipassana techniques is have to be practiced. As a result of that, one has become a non-returner now. Now in order to further abandon defilements, he is undertaking Brahma Vihara practices. And using those Brahma Vihara practices, actually he accomplished complete freedom of mind, cheto vimutti, either metta cheto vimutti, either karuna cheto vimutti, either mudita cheto vimutti, or upekkha cheto vimutti. The freedom of mind through loving kindness, complete freedom of mind through, say, compassion, complete freedom of mind through altruistic joy, complete freedom of mind through equanimity. So then one can use that as a base. And while being there, one is trying to recognize very, very subtle defilements. How eye making happens, how mind making happens, how various kinds of conceit happens. Because they are the fetters relevant to the upper half. Uddambhagya Sanyojana. So when one becomes a non-returner, the Orambhagya Sanyojana, the 5 lower fetters are abandoned. But still some 5 upper fetters are available. So they are the ones now one is going to abandon, eradicate. And here in this particular sutta, so he is practicing Brahma Viharas so that he is getting further uplifted, his mind become more expanded. And now, he is recognizing 4 noble truths. And 4 noble truths being used to recognize those subtle defilements so that one becomes an arahant. So basically, so actually I need to little explain how to practice loving kindness meditation also, because it is also mentioned here. So loving kindness meditation, as you know, it's a very common practice meditation method, and typically it is used as a samatha meditation, but here we can use as a vipassana meditation as well. And you can first practice samatha meditation, samatha oriented loving kindness, and when one's mind is fully established in the metta cheto vimutti, freedom of mind through loving kindness, then one abides by that. One dwell in that, use that as a base, kind of a reference, so that one recognize what is the stress. What is the tension? What is the dukkha? What are the forms of suffering available? And what is the cause of suffering? What is the reason? Because your mind is fairly purified now, your mind is fairly uplifted. So even a subtle stress you notice, even a subtle tension one may notice. You feel it burden. You feel that you are being tensed. You feel that your mind is a little obstructed. So then you are naturally trying to recognize the reason. What is the reason? What is the cause? And then one is abandoning that cause. And as a result of that, one is capable of dwelling in the, again back in that freedom of mind. So maybe we can discuss a little bit later in detail these four methods. Since I have explained a little bit more today, I'll stop here. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So if we have any new participants joining us for the first time, welcome. If you'd like to participate in the Q&A, you may submit your questions via the chat, or you may also raise your hand.
Okay, today there are no questions.
Okay, Priya, you may unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer.
It was
my Bhante.
Yes.
Bhante, you mentioned that we can drop qualities one by one in Buddha Anusthiti, Dhamma Anusthiti, Sangha Anusthiti. Did you mean by in one session or gradually session after session?
No, actually one is also enough. Now say for example, if you are practicing Buddha Anusati, it is not a must to practice Dhamma Anusati and Sangha Anusati, because Buddha Anusati itself is enough to concentrate one's mind. Now assume that you have more say faith towards the Dhamma even than the Buddha. Now then you can practice Buddha Dhamma Anusati. So likewise, I mean, it is not a must to practice all three. So assume that if you are taking Buddha Anusati, then even in Buddha Anusati, slowly actually you are training the mind. Because you know, at the beginning, mind is filled with various defilements. And as a result of that, jumping to this and that. So it's a monkey mind. So basically, such mind is being occupied by the Buddha's qualities. Now that is why it's very much like, say, you are trying to tame a wild elephant or wild horse. So what you are doing is you are making a strong fence and with in a large garden and allow that horse to say run as much as he likes, but within that boundary. So this boundary is the nine qualities if you are practicing Buddha Anusati. Now mind requires something to do. Mind requires something to think. So what we are given to think is the qualities of the Buddha. So it's a kind of a mechanism that we are using. Okay, now mind being occupied with some wholesome thinking. So what he is thinking is the qualities of the Buddha. Now slowly what happens is the defilements are abandoned. Now mind is thinking some wholesome qualities about the Buddha. So the unwholesome side is abandoned. Wholesome side is now slowly uplifted. Now when you are doing that, now you are thinking. But anyway, those are some wholesome thinking. But you need to slowly reduce that thinking and further improve the concentration. How you are doing it is to reduce certain qualities which are not that familiar to you, which are not that appealing to you. Now you are reducing that part and allow the mind to think only the ones he likes, ones it really appreciate. And then after them, sometimes mind only very much thinking only those qualities. And later you are abandoning certain parts of that as well. And then it is thinking only some little more qualities, rather less qualities he is thinking. But slowly it is getting concentrated. Suppose ultimately you are thinking only about a single quality, that means less thinking, but mind is concentrated. I mean, it's very much like an analogy. There you are, that garden, that fence, that boundary being reduced. See, as the horse getting tamed, so you are slowly narrowing down the garden, or making it smaller. And now it has less space to play, less space to run. But it is getting tamed. Slowly it is getting tamed, and ultimately you can keep it, stand still, you can hold it, and you have a tamed horse. So similarly, here also, at the beginning we are allowing the mind to think a large space, large things, 9 qualities, and slowly now you are thinking 8 qualities, 7 qualities, 6 qualities, 5 qualities, 3 qualities, 2 qualities, 1 quality. So that means one's mind is fairly concentrated. And even there, you can stop thinking and simply dwell in that quality. Then you are completely abandoning, a kind of thinking. Rather, you are dwelling. You have a fairly silent mind, but enjoying the qualities of the Buddha. That is the quality which is most appealing to you. So it's a very, very interesting practice. And so this is how actually we are developing concentration using Buddha Anusati or Dhamma Anusati or Sangha Anusati. So this is a typical way, one way actually we can use.
Yeah, very clear, Bhante. Thank you very much.
Right.
Everyone
Saranai.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Sohani for the next question.
Avasarai Bhante. Thank you, Jennifer. My question is, Venerable Bhante, that when you say it is the most appealing quality of the Buddha, for example, if we are trying very hard to stop unwholesome thoughts from arising in our mind, then you see that the quality, say, Arahant quality, where, you know, even in secret or even in hiding, the Buddha did not, so if that's the kind of reflection, is it? Then you see, this is the quality that I'm trying to develop, and then you, there's sort of an inspiration to, first of all, that, yeah, you're probably in the right direction. And this is what the Buddha talks about, and you kind of get a real meaning and understanding of that word. Is that correct?
Yeah, at the beginning, and that's why, I mean, you need to little do kind of a study of those qualities. Because if you are simply saying Arahang, Samma, Sambuddho, Vijjacharna, Sampanno, Sugato, so I mean, then they are merely words. So first of all, therefore, we need to understand why Buddha is called Arahant. What are the reasons? Why Buddha is called Samma Sambuddho? What are the reasons? So likewise, we need to do a little bit of study, and then we need to even memorize them. So because while in meditation, you are not referring a book, but you are capable of memorizing those qualities. And now during the meditation, when you are noting as Arahant, and you quickly remembers, okay, these are the reasons why Buddha is called Arahant. And when you are calling Samma Sambuddho, you are recalling, okay, these are the reasons why Buddha is called Samma Sambuddho. So very much like you are allowing the mind quickly think about certain qualities of the Buddha attributed to him, and that is called Samma Sambuddho. And it is summarized as Samma Sambuddho. Now, even though we call as 9 qualities, so this 9 is just an indication. There are many, many qualities available, but we are concentrating so much of qualities into these 9 phrases. So during the meditation, we are a little expanding that, and so that mind is now abide by the qualities of the Buddha. And later, You are now, when the mind is fully, assume now the mind is fully occupied with these qualities. Now there is nothing much it is thinking. It is not jumping to the past, it is not jumping to the future, it is not thinking about that, thinking about this, but it is only thinking about the Buddha's qualities. Now you are reducing even that thinking. Now you are dropping certain qualities which are not appealing to you, and you are now thinking only the qualities which are more beautiful, more appealing, more pleasing to you. And now mind get further uplifted and mind feel less burdened, because you know at the beginning you need to memorize what are those qualities and you need to reflect, you need to think. There are a certain amount of work involved. But later, as mind get tamed, as mind get concentrated and it is being more uplifted and less work, less burdened. Because it is more familiar quality now you are thinking. It is more appealing, happy quality that you are thinking. And it is quite evident to you, quite obvious to you. And you are very, very familiar with that. So likewise, you are making the mind very lighter. Mind more concentrated. Now it is less effort. You can see, I mean, even though it's a very simple technique, all those things that we have learned, now say, first of all, you need to recognize what are the qualities available. You need to memorize them. So the mindfulness is involved and you are thinking about it. You are allowing the mind to get occupied with that. And then you recognize, okay, the distractions are less. Now the mind is fully involved in that thinking. Now slowly you are reducing the effort by abandoning those, say, little unfamiliar qualities, little, say, difficult qualities, forgetful qualities, and you are only taking more easy qualities, more familiar qualities, more pleasant qualities to you, so that mind feel more comfortable, more lighter, more pleasant. It's a kind of a process that we are doing, and ultimately you are taking only one quality, so it is more easy for the mind, less burden. But now it is not jumping here and there, it is now completely tamed, fully trained, fully concentrated within a single quality.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
I believe that's the last question tonight, Bhante. We have a very quiet group today.
Yes. So actually, I like to mention that labhati attavedang, labhati dhammavedang. So this is a phrase available in the sutta. So Venerable Jnanaponika mentions here, attavedam means he gains enthusiasm about the goal. And labhati dhammavedang means he gains enthusiasm about the dhamma. But anyway, Majjhima Nikaya Attakatha, the commentary, mentioned that attaveda means inspiration arising in one who reveals the unwavering confidence. So he's reflecting, and as a result of that, he is getting unwavering confidence. Dhammaveda is kind of an inspiration arisen when the defilements are abandoned, and now he know that he is free from defilements. Previously, defilements are little available, but he is reflecting the qualities. So he feel more confident, more gladdened. Now even the defilements are dropped. Now he know, okay, defilements are now dropped. And now he feels further satisfied. So that is being defined as a Dhammaveda. Now these are different meanings explained onto this Attaveda and Dhammaveda. I think then actually we can get on to either we can stop it here, or we can get on to the what you call Brahma Viharas. What do you think, Jennifer?
Sure, Bhante. Yeah.
Then still, Radhi, yeah. One more question is coming.
Radhika, you may unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer. Ante, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
My question is, if you're using one type or one method, should you mix with another type? What I mean is, if I'm using the Vidya Pratapapa and it's going okay for me, in the sense even now I get the, what we call the Dhatu Guna or the vibrations when I'm listening to you, anytime my mind is quiet, and the when I'm walking, I get the awareness of the sensation on the feet automatically. In the sense, I don't have to do it anymore. So it's going well. Thoughts are coming, but they are not proliferating. I don't remember them. They just come and go. Is it okay that I don't do any of the other ones like Buddha Anusati or Metta or even Anapanasati? I think sometimes I'm a little tired and I want to sit down. Or should I do both?
No, that's a good question. Yeah, actually that's why I mentioned now these are different meditation techniques explained. So one model, one typical familiar or popular model is to first practice what you call the guardian meditations, and then you protect your mind, little gladden the mind, and then get into anapanasati or say iriyapata or dhatu manasikara, vedana anupassana, whatever that advanced kind of meditation, then you are later undertaking. So that is the typical familiar model. But anyway, we need to understand. So if your mind is already calm, already tranquil, already free from defilements, then you don't need to, spend time practicing all those four guardians. If you really want, you can practice them very briefly. Only spend few minutes, and then you can spend more time in that advanced kind of meditation where you do further anapanasati or dhatu manasikara or vedana anupassana, because that is more fruitful, because that is what you need to do further to further your understanding, to further your wisdom. So at such occasion you don't need to practice either Buddha anusati or Dhamma anusati or Sangha anusati or Asubha, Marananusati, Metta, none is necessary. But the problem is that for some people, their main meditation technique may be, Buddhanusati. So then they are using that as a complete, a Samatha meditation, and then they are trying to practice Vipassana. For another person, their first meditation is, loving kindness, Metta, and assume that they can even develop it to the level of freedom of mind, Metta Cheto Vimutti, while being there, they can practice Vipassana. So different approaches are available. So, we don't need to practice all the different approaches. Whatever is familiar to you, whatever is more convenient to you, and giving more results, and you feel confident in that, then that is enough to practice.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Now, I can't say that it's totally free of defilements,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It is sometimes very calm in the sense, but sometimes if there is something traumatic happening, like I have a friend who is very sick in hospital, well, she's actually terminal, and I get some messages, I see my mind is in turmoil, and I'm concerned, and I see worry and things like that. So I'm not saying that all the time it is like that, but I'm saying even when it is like that, I go back to walking meditation or some other form of iriyapata.
Correct. That's why.
Right?
Yes, definitely correct. Because different techniques are available. And all these techniques have, some similar benefits, and certain, different benefits are also available. Now, thing is, say for example, if you are practicing Vedana Anupassana, So sometimes you have to go through, or sometimes you need to observe, you got to observe, say continuously, some painful feelings. And sometimes you feel burdened with that, sometimes you feel little unhappy about it. So if you feel that your mind is not that energetic of continuing. On such occasion, practicing metta, practicing buddha anusati, dhamma anusati, sangha anusati would be really beneficial, because you again feel uplifted, again feel delighted, again feel gladdened. Because this gladness, happy atmosphere is some kind of a prerequisite for the meditation. But sometimes when you are involved with pure vipassana, so mind can become a little dry. On such occasion, switching back to a little bit of samatha meditation is useful. But on the other hand, if you can continue your samatha meditation without any problem, things are happening smoothly, and you can simply step back and watch how mind is observing how things are happening. So slowly, slowly various insights are arising. So then it's a very perfect meditation, perfect situation for vipassana. You don't need to switch back to samatha. And as you mentioned, I mean, when you are getting stressed up, if your mind is a little crowded, rather than practicing buddhanusati, probably you can go to walking, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And it definitely
yes.
helps. It definitely helps.
Yes.
So no harm,
yes,
no problem.
It helps me, and I don't even have to do sakman.
Yeah.
Bhavan.
Mm-hmm.
Even when going for a brisk walk,
mm-hmm.
I find that these thoughts are just coming,
mm-hmm.
and they are not bothering me.
Right.
I just see it and I say, yes, I understand this concern, but then there is nothing I can do about it.
Right.
At this point. You know, I have done everything I can do. So
right.
I just feel that I don't have a need to worry because I have done my best.
Correct, correct.
So
yeah.
That's what I have been doing.
Correct.
But there are times I have been doing metta for her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's focus, because there is nothing that I can do from so far away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I will do some metta for her.
Correct,
because
correct.
Nothing else I can do.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why, I mean, when we feel confident and we have done honestly what we can do, so I mean,
yes.
then we need to understand, okay, I mean, there are limits. So I can't be a savior, and no one
yes.
can be a savior. I mean, we are all subjected to our own karma, and the things are sometimes beyond our control. Not only sometimes, basically it's beyond our control. So that is where, in a way, you can practice equanimous meditation, or what we call the upekkha kind of meditation. So we understand, okay, all the beings are subjected to this kind of situation, and they are abide by, they are governed by the law of karma. So this is the way of life. That's another lesson, in a way. Rather than getting panicked, rather than being worried, here actually we are trying to calm down ourselves. Because sometimes, you know, when compassion is available, sometimes we become driven by compassion, and we start panicking, we start crying, and that is not really the compassion. That is where the compassion being in a way harassed by some other worrying type of quality. So that we
yes.
need to little balance these things. So when we are practicing Brahma Viharas, for example, assume that you are practicing loving kindness. So loving kindness can disguise, or rather lust can disguise as loving kindness. So it feels like you are practicing loving kindness, but underneath what is available may be kind of a lustful behavior. So similarly, you may feel compassionate, but underneath there could be kind of a hatred even. Or if, on the other hand, if we are practicing compassion, but we don't know how to manage it, we don't know how to maintain the distance, ultimately we can become overwhelmed by compassion and we lose our balance. That also can happen. So therefore, I mean, all these qualities, how we are maintaining this under our purview, under the mindfulness. So mindfulness is the quality helping us to monitor how things are happening. So even though when we are practicing compassion meditation, even though we are practicing, say, loving kindness meditation, we have to have that kind of a monitoring process going on. time to time you need to step back and see how is the mind, how is the situation. Is the mind now capable of practicing loving kindness without many phrases? Now, like, say for example, now we discussed today about Buddha Anusati. Now, assume that now we are practicing all the 9 qualities. We are using the mind again and again to different qualities of the Buddha. Now, time to time, we need to step back and see how the state of the mind is.
Yes.
Are there any distractions, or is the mind fully occupied with these 9 qualities now? Now, you need to take a decision. Okay, what is the quality that I can drop so that the mind is less burdened, further a little, say, concentrated? So rather than occupying the mind on 9 qualities, let me occupy it on 8 qualities. Let me occupy on 7 qualities. So that decision we have to make during the session. So that is actually where the mindfulness, wisdom, clear comprehension actually come into the picture. So as we are continuing the practice, at a given moment, we have to step back and see the situation and come to a kind of a conclusion, come to a decision. Okay, now is the time to drop one quality. Okay, now I am reducing it to 8. Now it is the time to drop another quality. Now I am reducing it to, say, 6. So likewise, so that's a kind of a introspection one needs to do.
Yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thiruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sannai. Okay, Jennifer, I think then we'll stop for the moment. Probably next week we can discuss about the loving kindness and the other Brahma Vihara practices. And we can start discussing a little bit in detail about the defilements explained here. So there are 16 defilements. Actually, only the names I have explained, but we can little explore what they are really mean. And how to recognize them, and most importantly, and how one can abandon them during the vipassana. So those kinds of things we can discuss maybe on next week, and then we'll wind up the session today.
Wonderful, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay. Then today we have spent around 1 hour and 15 minutes in Dhamma discussion. Whatever the accumulated merits, we'll share with all the past relatives, with all the celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these qualities, these merits, help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha chabummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha chabummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha chabummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mami bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mami bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mami bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Thiruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sannai.